Welcome back to the MLS Net Boys podcast. My name is Chase. I'm here with my good friend Jacob. It's a wonderful week in MLS. The sun is out here in Oregon. Seasonal depression is gone, but the Timbers make us depressed yet again. How are you doing, Jacob?
Minus that, which didn't actually happen. I'm pretty darn good. It's a great day. It's good to talk MLS. What can I say? It's good to talk MLS. Me and Chase got the 7.5 ounce soda pops.
Drinking a nice Sprite. Only 90 calories. Disregard the fact that I already downed one before we even started this. So,
what's the name of our friend who said their coworker started listening to this podcast? Do you remember?
No.
I was gonna shout that person out, but
I don't remember.
I can't remember. But if you're listening and you were referred this podcast by one of our friends, we appreciate you. We appreciate you supporting not only us, but American soccer.
If you were to give your pitch, which neither of us do this, we don't actively go out and tell people to listen to our podcast, but if you were to give a pitch to just a random person on the street as to why they should listen to our podcast, what would your pitch be? I'm putting you on the spot. I've never posed this question to you before.
This is going off script. I would say, like we said, I mean, if you're getting information about an MLS podcast, you have to be a sicko of some form. You're not a Premier League guy. You're not a La Liga guy. You're not a champion. You're listening to MLS.
Not a Bundesliga guy.
And that's right. And what I would say is, you're a lovely person. That's why you need some lovely coverage. You don't want to hear extra time. You don't want to hear the Miami just glaze fest. No. Hear about the Rapids. Hear about DC United. Hear about the silliness of MLS.
I agree. I think I would ask somebody, I'd say, where do you get your just normal news from? Where do you get filled in on things? Do you go to the big guys? Do you always go to the big websites? If so, maybe our podcast isn't for you.
Do you hate local businesses?
But if you appreciate the nitty-gritty, the deep down, the real stories, the real, you know, the finger on the beat, you know, the finger on the pulse.
I don't know what phrase you're saying. But
I don't know either. That would be my pitch. Just go off the rails and start saying weird phrases that don't even make sense.
My go-to way, though, is just going to be to print out a mass amount of, like, stickers and then just slap them on people's personal property without their consent.
I think I would probably just read the person and just glaze like crazy. I would just figure out what they like, and then I would just lie to them and say our podcast just talks extensively. Yeah, dude, yeah, we totally cover the Prem. Like, we love covering, like, you know, big Prem games. We don't mind her. Yeah, dude, we're a Bundesliga podcast. Oh, yeah, we totally get into politics. I would just lie until they actually listen to the podcast.
You hit every base of our club's group chat right there. I respect that. MLS occurred this weekend, and what our podcast is actually about, and we're starting off in Chicago. Now, me and Chaser, we're gonna try to keep this more condensed. We got some unfinished business to do on the FM.
We got to dethrone a monster.
And we're going to start in the Windy City, which this game was nuts. It was 4-3 Chicago Fire over Montreal.
This was... We both burped at the same time.
Both of us tried to... Oh, man, go
this
ahead.
This is probably the one game this week that we should actually give some more attention to, because this was absolutely just insanity from start to finish. It was Montreal took an early lead. You know, their new striker Kokoro gets a brace of penalties, which is kind of funny that your team goes up 2-0 on penalties and you still just fluff the game. But they go up 2-0 on penalties. Kind of a back and forth game from then on. It's just a weird, like, really windy game. Comes down to the end of the game. I'm kind of skipping a lot of the middle here, but it's 3-3 in the 98th minute of the game. Kellen Acosta, last man back on his own halfway line, just skies a ball, hopefully, like, trying to get it over the defense towards the corner that somebody can get onto. And it just, it looks like it just gets this insane speed boost. The wind just picks it up and it just turns direction completely and flies straight towards the goal. And then the Montreal goalkeeper, I don't remember his name, it's like
Jonathan Syrah.
Syrah just misreads it completely, takes like two steps backwards, and then just kind of falls as it, as he just kind of like palms it like barely, and it goes into his net.
Yeah, I was choosing between this game and the Miami one. I was telling Jason, I definitely made the right call, I think, because yeah, this was crazy. This was Montreal was up 3-1 in the 80th minute.
That is crazy.
82nd minute, Raheem Edwards gets a red card, so they're down a man. They're still up 3-1. 84th minute, Brian Gutierrez scores. 95th minute, Hugo Kuipers, DP striker in Chicago, scores. And then, yeah, 99th minute, Kellen Acosta. So, I mean, within 15 minutes, Chicago turns the whole thing around for their first win of the year. Nuts.
Yeah, yeah, it's absolutely insane and just incredibly lucky. I mean, that last goal was insane. I was listening to the Extra Time guys. Andrew Wiebe brought this up on both Extra Time and the MLS wrap-up, but he said he checked like the Northern Atlantic like weathered some like website that measures it, and he looked back, and that exact like hour, like that moment when Kellen Acosta like hit that pass was the peak of the wind speed, like that whole entire week was like that exact moment. So, kind of crazy, like fate just took over there. But
God decided the Chicago Fire needed 3 points.
You see Frank Klopas afterwards comes out and says that this was like a great win and like huge for them to build on this, which I don't want to take away from that, but also I feel like it's like kind of ignoring the fact that they just got incredibly lucky. Scored. Yeah, the vibes got to be high after a win like that where you have a crazy comeback. But I think you got to have a little bit of a reality check and be like, "Hey guys, we got really lucky there. Let's not just be this terrible for 90 minutes." Like,
yeah, I think either way the vibes were high because they just really needed that. This is week 4 and Chicago hadn't got a win. They had good pieces, good moves, but it just hadn't come together for them. So I think either way, they'll take it. It's just one of those moments where, especially too, since Kuipers got a goal, got off the mark, and then Kellen Acosta, kind of like the kind of like leader of this like rebuild, it seems like the leading piece, gets the goal to bookmark it. The wind, yeah. I mean, but honestly, not in that dramatic and that like weird status, but you need lucky games, and every team at some point kind of benefits from the luck and the...
I was going to say, imagine if they were playing on the opposite side, like playing against the wind at the very end there, and Kellen Acosta just kicks that ball up and it gets tied up and goes like 10 yards ahead of him and then just drops. Like, that'd be such a... It's just completely different end to that game. But crazy game from Chicago. Let's move on, though, to DC United hosting Inter Miami. This was the game I chose to watch instead of Chicago-Montreal.
Where's Messi? I love how every time I see a Miami post that has nothing to do with Messi, just posting like one of the poor other guys on their team. Poor, I say, as they live in Miami. But there's just so many comments of just these random accounts that look like spam accounts, and they just go, "Where's Messi? Post Messi."
It is sad to see like a lot of the shine taken away from everybody else just to... You know, because Messi's on this team, but interesting game as well. I mean, not nearly as exciting as the 4-3 thriller in Chicago, but DC United, they looked like they were in control early on from the start. Jared Stroud got a pretty good goal inside the box. I mean, he's a villain of a soccer player, but just turns around and rifles one into the top corner. But Miami is just kind of inevitable when you're playing against a, you know, teams of this quality that aren't like the best, you know, that top tier in the league. I think Miami's kind of just like inevitable. Like they're just going to walk over these teams. Like DC didn't really stand in much of a chance when Miami got more of the ball, you know?
Yeah, and I think other teams have shown kind of the blueprint on what to do versus Miami, but it just depends is if Miami's going to take their chances, how fit they are, who's available, and we see they still have the quality. Suarez with a brace, And Miami ends up winning 3-1 on the road, keeping the train rolling without Messi, which is hugely important for them.
Suarez is on like 4 goals and 3 assists in, I think it's 4 games. No, that is crazy, especially because like it was weird when I watched him out there in this game. He didn't look like super immobile, but the camera was on him when the ref like blew the final whistle, and it was almost like a switch like flipped, because as soon as it happened, then he just started limping.
Like, he's got some Apple device in his brain where as soon as the like whistle blows, he's like in.
He looked really good during this game, though. I mean, his first goal came from a nice build-up. Ball played a little behind him, tucks it away. Second goal, pretty fortunate, but they win the ball off Matthijs Klich, which I love to see because that guy was just a freaking jerk when he played against the Timbers. But win the ball off of him, go down the other end, play it into Luis Suarez, who just sees a wide-open opportunity and goes, no, I'm going to cut it back on my left, on my weak foot, run into 2 defenders, then run around the ball and then chip it over to the goalie. So kind of fun to watch him. Just, it looked like he was playing like against kids, honestly, which is sad because he's 47 years old and has 1 good leg.
I was going to say love to see it, but I'm not really sure if I do, honestly. He must have been watching Darlington Nagbe when he scored against Kansas City for that first goal. Anyway, yeah, big win for Miami. That's a deep pull if anybody even recognizes that reference.
Talking about the banger volley?
No, I was talking about the when Nagbe scored against Sporting Kansas City and like fell because the ball was like behind him.
Oh, the pullback from Ryan Johnson to
Ryan
Nagbe.
Johnson.
I thought you were talking about the second goal, the like turnaround chip, because I was going to say that's more like Nagbe against Dallas in like 2015.
No,
2014.
I meant a much more forgettable goal. So
That is.
Next up, my second favorite team was playing. Seattle Sounders were hosting the Colorado Rapids at home. Rapids, my second favorite team this week. Man, Seattle just, they just find a way to just blow some of these games at home. I feel like every year there's a game where they're at home in control, up a goal, and then they'll just get like a boneheaded red card and then just like lose all the momentum. It's exactly what happened. Rui Diaz scores in the 11th minute. It's a penalty. Seattle looking, you know, decently in control. And then Josh Atencio just goes in on a Rapids player in the midfield, gets a second yellow card. Can't really complain too much. It was pretty warranted. And then Seattle's on the back foot. Colorado starts to take control. Colorado didn't look out of it by any means the whole game. They just weren't really working in the final third to get clear chances. And then they just pounded on Seattle. The XG almost was 3 times in the favor of Colorado by the end. And Colorado ties it in the 88th with Kevin Cabral. Could have been a win, though, for Colorado, honestly. They missed a penalty kick earlier. They had a point-blank chance in stoppage time that Cabral just whiffed at on a corner kick. And Seattle's offense, man, 2 goals, both penalty kicks, 0 goals from open play this year.
I was going to say, things are not going your way when you get scored on by Kevin Cabral. He has 9 career goals in MLS and almost 5,000 minutes played.
So more than 10% of his goals are against the Seattle Sounders because of this one tapping.
That's insane to me that he's played, I mean, if you average that out, 4,900 minutes, almost 5,000 minutes, or that's, how many games is that? If you put that into full 90s, it's close to 50-ish games, 54, 55 games, something like that. That is insane that he's only scored 9 goals in that time, and one of them was against the Seattle Sounders. You love to see it. I don't know. Seattle just looking rough, man. Looking so rough. Colorado not the best either, but this is a good result for them, though. A nice point on the road at a tough place to play.
I will say, since their opening game against Portland where they got crushed, and even that game, the scoreline was a little flattering to Portland. They lost their first game. Since then, they've had 5 points. They've played 2 games on the road at Salt Lake and at Seattle, both tough opponents, and then at home versus Nashville, which is a tough team to break down. They've got 5 points, so that averages out to 1 win, 2 draws, with two games on the road at hard point opponents, that's pretty solid. So trending in the right direction for the Rapids, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely not a terrible start for them. I think it was just a little over-exaggerated. Like you said, that first game, they went to the Timbers, who were red hot. I mean, rocking stadium that night. So tough to put it against them too much, but not too much else to say about this game, honestly. 1-1 draw against two just bottom feeders in the Western Conference.
I will say, with the Seattle things, pretty much every MLS expert has had them at the top spot in the West. Undoubtedly, a couple had them at second. I was going to pick them to miss the playoffs, but I didn't want to do that 2 years in a row and just be a hater. I had them at like a cool seventh place, and I'm feeling better about that. I still think they'll recover, and this is not like, but this is, we're definitely seeing like a low point, but
I would agree with you, except for whatever reason, Seattle always does this. They always just, they're going to go on this insane like 10-game win streak to end the season and pick up 30 points that are going to put them up into like third or second place. You know it's going to happen. It happens every year. Like, Brian Schmetzer goes and sells another part of his soul so the Sounders can just continue their dominance, unfortunately. But let's move on. I don't want to talk about the Sounders anymore.
We don't.
We'll talk about a more exciting game. The Columbus Crew just putting the beat down on New York Red Bulls, 3-0, and it just looked out of reach, like, from the start. New York just could not keep up, could not handle Columbus, and it was just, I mean, 13-minute, Cucho gets a goal to start things off. Jason Russell Rowe, like I said the other week, like, a great option as your third choice striker. I mean, he's looked great, and he's getting good minutes for them because he looks so good. He gets a nice, really confident, professional goal in the 56th minute, and then Aiden Morris to top it off in the 66th gets another goal, and then they just kind of coast from there. They just look so confident for the rest of the game.
Yeah, this on paper was supposed to be a much closer game because Red Bulls coming into this had a really solid start to the year, but you just see the like the maturity and just the quality difference between them. A good team and then like a top tier team in MLS, and that's what Columbus is right now. Doesn't look like anybody's stopping them at the moment, and yeah, I'm curious to see how this all pans out by the end of the year. Speaking of which, we talk about all the time Samuel Adeniran, striker who Seattle had in their system but then, you know, didn't hold on to, ended up going somewhere else for more playtime, ends up scoring a lot of goals. That's Jason Russell Rowe as well. I mean, he was in the Toronto FC system, was stuck at Toronto FC 2, and wasn't really getting a look from the first team at all. So Columbus trades for him, starts him in their second team, and he tears it up, and now he's doing incredible.
Yeah, he's looking really good. I mean, kind of an embarrassment of riches for Columbus to... I mean, they found a way to work a lot of these guys in at the same time, but you have Cucho Hernandez, Christian Ramirez, and Jason Russell Rowe, like all three of those guys I could see starting for over half the teams in the league.
San Jose.
San Jose would start all three of these guys and still find a way to like lose out of the playoffs.
That's brutal.
Columbus Crew, though, looking like
poor San Jose fans
just catching strays
right now.
Own
business.
Columbus, though, still look like clearly the best team in the league, without a doubt, in my opinion at least.
I'd agree, and in the Champions League as well, and making a deep run as well. So, I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. If they win a Champions League, they kind of turn into the dynasty of this decade so far. Kind of starting in 2020, they won MLS Cup, won it again 2023. And if they win one more piece of silverware, I feel like that would kind of cement them. You had, like, in the early 2010s, the first half was the Galaxy. The second half, unfortunately, I'd give to Seattle as, like, the best team. So far, it's looking like Crew, but we'll see.
Started that dominance for them? Caleb Porter started that dynasty.
That's right. Respect Caleb Porter. Let's move on. NYCFC hosting Toronto FC, Yankee Stadium. It's a 2-1 win for New York City FC. Nick Cushing is off the mark for this year. 3 points in the bag.
I would still fire him, dude. They look terrible. And I think there's just something about Nick Cushing that's just so unsettling to me. Like, I don't know why. Like, I don't know. I don't think he's a great coach by any means.
He had the lowest points per game out of an NYCFC coach. And you know what's interesting? Chase just laughs at that immediately. Just today, Monday, March 18th, we're recording this. Ronnie Dyla just got fired in Belgium from Club Brugge because he started at a different club and then worked up to that job, and he just got fired today. He had a 1.7 points per game record with NYCFC, which is 0.5 more points per game, which doesn't sound like a lot, but over a season it is. Would you give that guy a phone call if you were NYCFC? He's a proven winner with your team.
Bring him back.
I mean, not only did he win the cup, which is obviously the glaring accomplishment, but NYCFC was a top five, top six minimum team with him at the league. They were a good squad.
They looked good. I think the difference, though, is they had an actual striker back then. I think if he comes in, it'd be really unfair to Nick Cushing if Ronnie Dyla comes back and then they buy a striker and then they just look they look way better and everybody just puts it on the manager. I think Nick Cushing isn't a great coach, but he's been a little unfortunate to be given just a group of kids, one random, super old, like, Argentinian, like, center attacking mid who got injured, and then no strikers. Well, they have a striker that just doesn't know what offsides is, apparently.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And you don't really see stuff like that happen, honestly. A manager who comes back within, like, 2 years who left for greener pastures. More of just a hypothetical that's interesting. But, yeah, City gets their first win. They came back, actually, too. They were down in the 7th minute against Toronto. Toronto, that's their first loss of the year. So, I mean, not a whole lot else to say, like you said. We'll move on. Move on to another team who desperately could use a win. Austin FC hosting Philadelphia Union. 2-2 draw. And, I mean, these guys were up. They went down in the 14th minute, get two goals in 3 minutes in the second half, so they're up 2-1, concede a second half later-ish equalizer. And I was telling Chase, these guys just find a way to collapse at home and just not win games in front of their home fans.
They're like Chicago, except this week. Like, that's kind of the Chicago syndrome, is like, have a really good showing, give your fans some hope for the first 70 minutes, and then just have things melt down at the end of the game.
You just know it's going to happen with those teams. You
it's
just
really
know,
sad.
Like, when they're up one-ish goal, unless they're up like two or three goals consistently, they're not going to close out the game at home.
That's really unfortunate. But I don't know. I feel bad for Austin fans because it just seems like it's so painful to be at like this stage of the process, and you kind of just have to accept it. Everybody knows they're at the beginning of like the build to whatever it's going to look like, but it's so painful to be there, though, because just knowing that, like, the pieces are coming and you just have to be patient and almost, like, I don't know, like, we've been spoiled as, like, Timbers fans, and I think a lot of other clubs have been spoiled, like, going into every season, like, at least with, like, the hope and, like, thought that, like, oh, like, we have a good chance of winning something this year. Like, we could win something. And I feel like Austin FC, like, their fans couldn't go into the season thinking that.
That's a really good point, because I agree. Most times I listen to another podcast with, you know, fans from different teams with their own squad. And we do too. You kind of hype up your own team. You're a bit of a homer. And you expect your team to finish decently well. You always kind of overestimate your roster. However, with Austin this offseason, when I was listening to Austin, like, fans and people talk about their team, nobody is expecting them to do good. And I can't imagine what that feeling is like, honestly. That kind of sounds miserable.
It is sad, because I don't know if it's just like how naive I've been all the years I've been a Timbers fan, but I go into every year like with some optimism. You know, even this year where like our squad wasn't completely settled, we still have two DP spots open. Like, you go in with optimism of like, we've been in a win now phase for a long time. We've never really had to step back and be like, all right, we need to like build up to a point where we can win. And maybe that would be a smart move for more clubs in MLS, but I feel like not there. It's kind of rare to find a team like that in this league that is, yeah, you just go into the season just knowing, like, you almost expecting not to win a trophy.
True.
Or at least have a good shot at it if your whole team is healthy.
But I will say the one caveat is this is a league more than most where it just takes like one summer window, one off season, and you can turn things, even not even with
one
the
player.
Roster.
It could take one player in this league.
Or a coach, as we kind of see with John Herdman. I know it's very, very early on, but they just look much different. They got like one less win so far than they did all of last year, which is nuts.
You think Austin FC is just going to turn their fortunes around by bringing in a John Herdman?
Picture they just bought him from Toronto.
They just bring in John Herdman, and all of a sudden you got Rigoni and Diego Rubio. Just
the Insignia Bernadeschi.
They just start popping off. John Gallagher is just like looking like prime.
Richie Larea.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know. I feel bad for Austin fans, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Like we said, like,
is there?
There's all it takes is one player, man. Like, you've seen it.
You're
with
right.
So many, like, Sounders, the first trophy that won, or the first MLS Cup, like, it took them getting Lodeiro halfway through the season.
Yeah, and they were, like, the worst team in the West
and
that year.
All it took was that. Like, Timbers getting Valeri, like, immediately made us title contenders. And all it takes is one, like, really special player. Like, Minnesota, if they didn't have, funny, I mean, if they didn't have Reynoso, which they kind of didn't the past year and a half. But when they got him, that made them a serious contender in this league. So all it takes is just one really smart, really well thought out signing.
Agree. Chins up, Austin FC. You're going to maybe make it. We're going to move on. Vancouver Whitecaps visiting FC Dallas. This was kind of an interesting game. Vancouver wins 3-1 at Dallas. And not looking great in Dallas. You got a Fafa Pico goal against his former club for the Whitecaps.
Whitecaps look good. They look like a solid team, and Dallas just
don't.
They still have a lot to figure out, man. And it's rough to watch right now because this is a team that everybody was really high on going into the season, and they were missing a lot of pieces to start, but they're starting to get those guys back into the lineup. I mean, Jesus Ferreira started, Leggett started this game. They still have a solid squad all around. They aren't really missing too many other really, really important pieces, but for whatever reason, it's just not clicking for them.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, so far, they have one win. It came at home. It came the first week. It was a stoppage time winner as well. So things could look a lot worse for Dallas. But Vancouver climbs up to second place, 7 points, and they've only played 3 games. They had a bye week the first game, actually. So they're on one less game than pretty much every team in the Western Conference. So, yeah, we've seen this song and dance from Vancouver before where they give this impression they're a really solid team, and then just something changes at some point. I hope that's not the case because
Vanni Sartini comes back.
Like we said, like, Vancouver deserves to kind of have like a good, successful patch where it's not just them pounding down other teams in the Canadian Championship. I would love to see them do really well in a season, bring home like a Shield or an MLS Cup. I don't expect that to happen, don't get me wrong, but it would be really interesting and I think good for the league to see. Next up, Houston Dynamo beat Portland 1-0. After that, Sporting Kansas City host.
You just skip on by the most stupid game of the weekend.
It actually doesn't count.
lay out the reasons as to why this game doesn't count.
Because some guy on Reddit told me so.
It was just your second account on Reddit.
Yeah, I forgot I posted something.
Houston beats the Timbers 1-0 in a pretty cagey game.
You're right.
Houston dominates possession as you'd expect. Timbers manage far more shots. Not as you'd normally expect, but kind of playing as these two teams you would expect on paper. Like, Houston dominates the ball. They're going to move it side to side. They're going to try and pull you out of position and find the gaps. And then Timbers just kind of looking to be explosive on the counter with that front three of Antony, Asprilla, and Moreno. Just a lightning, just crazy fast front three.
Yeah, for me, this was an interesting one because Timbers' XG was 2.4 as opposed to Houston's 1.4. And we've been on the wrong end of that, as you know, for Portland for the start of the season. So it kind of is starting to level off. For me, this game, for Houston, it's huge because they needed a win. They hadn't got a win in the season so far. They won in Champions League in advance, but now that's done. So already they're out. So they need to start picking up points. They've got U.S. Open Cup that they're going to be in it as well. So that's another competition to worry about. And any points like this, especially at home, especially against a Western Conference team, is going to be huge because they need to get healthy and they need to make some signings. So anything before then is just a bonus. And for Portland, I think it just shows the lack of a number nine, somebody who's clinical, who can put away these chances.
Yeah, and that's where I think a lot of their issues will go away once they bring in. I mean, it's basically confirmed now that Jonathan Rodriguez is coming, and I think that solves a lot of their issues because he's a focal point that defenses have to focus on, that free up more space in the attack. It'll be interesting to see because he's kind of a guy that wants to come in and find it at his feet, and maybe that crowds Evander's space. Maybe that gives Evander more space if they kind of find separate pockets, but I don't know. Not a game I really want to talk about too much more, unfortunately. Houston, though, huge win. Great for them. They needed a result like that to kind of kickstart their season. Kind of a poor start for them, so good job, Houston. You beat the Timbers.
Well done.
I'm never going to say that again.
Sporting Kansas City hosting San Jose Earthquakes. A 2-1 win for Sporting Kansas City. San Jose continues their winless start to the season. It was SKC's first win as well, actually, so kind of interesting. San Jose, man, looking rough. This was the first game all season that Bobasi's gotten a shot. Like I've been kind of saying, I keep seeing violent, not bad, but like messages saying Bobasi needs to be benched. Things just aren't clicking. The fans are getting upset. Every post I see on Quake's Twitter is just hashtag sell the team. It's looking rough.
They had a lot of shots and a lot of opportunities in this game as well. They had far more than SKC, but I don't know what it is. They looked so much better last year and the year before. Like, they were really starting to build towards something, but there's just, like, no real cohesion in this team. It just doesn't look good. That they can't really seem to find opportunities. And I can't really pinpoint the reason as to why.
Right. I will say,
I just feel like they need some, like, at least one more high caliber player. Similar to Austin. Like, if they bring in one just stud player, I think that would help a lot.
Right. I won't lie. I haven't watched a ton of San Jose. That really hasn't been on my priority list in terms of MLS teams, but yeah, they went with a 4-4-2, which was a bit of a switch-up for them, employing Preston Judd and Obobese, trying to, you know, have a little bit of a more firepower. And, yeah, it's just weird. They brought in Pellegrini, who came from the Scandinavian, one of the leagues out there. I think it was Norway, Bodø Glimt. And he's supposed to be their high-level chance-creating player, but it just, once again, I mean, he's 33 years old, like, it's kind of an awkward time to come to MLS unless you're like a superstar level player, and that hasn't really panned out. Obobese cooled off. If Espinoza can't output his, you know, percentages as last year, it kind of looks less enticing in the attack, at least.
Yeah, and that's kind of that's the big area they need improvement on. I mean, they're not good defensively at all. I mean, they have -6 goal difference across the first four games, so they're not, you know, super shored up at the back by any means. Like, if they had a Nashville-level defense and were struggling to score goals, they'd probably still be picking up points, but they're in this weird, like, purgatory of, like, trying to be this fluid attacking team and put a lot of pressure on the other team and be in the other half. But at the same time, they just have no quality up there. So
they're kind of mid in work both
for them. Yeah.
In both sectors, except for goalkeeper. They got a great goalkeeper.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that can't win you games. You know who, if I'm the Quakes, who I'm giving a ring? I'm calling Tim Bezbachenko and saying, hey.
I thought you were about to say Chris Wondolowski.
You probably scored more goals than a Bobasi this season. I'm saying, hey, I'm calling Columbus Crew. I'm saying, hey, you guys got three starting caliber forwards. Like you said, the dots just connected in my mind as we were going through this.
Just bring Jason Russell Rowan.
Or maybe Christian Ramirez. I mean, I feel like, I don't know who Columbus would be more willing to give up. I feel like Ramirez because Russell Rowe has a bigger potential, but I don't know.
I don't think they let any of their guys go. If I'm Columbus, I don't let any of those guys go unless they're actively like throwing a fit, you know?
I agree, and I don't think they would, but if I'm San Jose, I throw in an offer they can't refuse because the way this train is rolling, I don't trust San Jose to get it figured out.
I go to Miami and I say, Leo Campana, you want to be the number one? And you bring him to San Jose.
I would love that too. Somewhere where there's a striker who's not really the clear number one, but is starting caliber. I agree.
Nathan Fagasa, you guys want to buy him for $17 million?
That's right, man. That's right. Respect to San Antonio FC alumni. We're going to move on to some brighter pastures in Minnesota. Minnesota United. Head coach Eric Ramsey comes across the pond from Manchester United, the lesser-known United squad, and he watched last week in the hotel room, he said, in Minnesota, but he's on the touchline for this one, and Minnesota wins 2-0 versus LAFC. Hugo Lloris has not seen anything like a packed Allianz Arena singing Wonderwall post-game.
Do you think he stayed after and soaked up the scenes?
Just like stood there like when another team does a trophy lift, kind of with his arms like on his...
Just soaked it up and then went into the locker room and broke a toaster.
Justin Martinez.
Minnesota, though, top of the league or top of the Western Conference. Crazy.
Crazy.
Crazy to say. Nobody, I mean,
no coach.
I was high on them.
I wasn't.
Nobody else thought much of this team at all, and they didn't have a coach for their first three games
or a sporting director for the first
director, and they just got in a coach that, I mean, in the post game interview he even admitted like he still doesn't know everybody's names and stuff, like still trying to get used to everything at Minnesota, and was still down there on the touchline for this game.
Love to see it. You love to see somebody. Yeah, I mean,
this guy, for the record, is 4 years younger than Lionel Messi.
Kind of crazy. Yeah, he's the youngest coach in MLS history, I think, permanent head coach.
I saw a stat that like across world football, he's like in the top five for youngest coaches to record a win or something like that. I think the youngest was Julian Nagelsmann with like Hoffenheim. And then everybody after that was like 30, 31. He's 32, so young in the top five for youngest head coach to record a win ever.
Pretty nuts. And this is like the feel-good story of the year so far. And they've been doing this without Reynoso, mind you. So there's always one team, and I think we even talked about this when we were doing predictions. There's always one team that everybody expects to be like really bad, but ends up just on a tear to start the new year. It's definitely Minnesota to start so far.
Looking great, and LAFC looking not so great.
Nashville hosting Charlotte FC, a 2-1 win for Nashville. Once again, much needed. They're out of the Champions Cup. They haven't won a game before this all year, and Sam Surridge is back. Haney Mukhtar has been back, and they get a 2-1 win with a goal from Surridge and Alex Mule.
Two headers. This is the epitome of Nashville right here.
This is Nashville, Gary Smith ball. Just, Chase is wearing a Nashville kit right now, I might add.
I am, and I still hate the way this team plays. Just sit back, hard nose defense, bomb up the wing, cross it into your 6'7" British dude who's scored like his first header that I've ever seen him score. I'm sure he scored other ones for Nashville, but I don't really watch him. But every time I see like highlights of him, it's never doing headers. It's always like weird breakaways and like slotted like through balls and stuff like that, which just always seemed like such a waste of this guy's like physical ability.
He had a clutch. I think it was on his debut. He got the game winner against Club America, a header. But yeah, Nashville's not too high on my watching priority. I will say I'm with you 100%. I don't like watching Nashville. It's kind of boring. I respect Nashville. I love what they're doing. I'd love that there's like a difference. I mean, for me, it felt like in MLS in years past that the styles of play weren't as defined. You had some teams who were more, you know, progressive and more forward thinking, like a Sporting Kansas City, who are holding on to possession really high. But now it feels like you've got the Columbus Nancy ball, and you've got a team like Nashville who's going to sit deep, and then you've got counterattack. Like, there's a good variety, and I think that's pretty interesting and cool.
Who is the most well equipped team in the league to dismantle a Nashville?
I don't really know. Somebody who thrives with the ball, that does well defending in transition, somebody who, because I don't know.
I was going to say, there's a few that come to mind. To me, the top two are Miami and Columbus, because they're both teams that are just lethal with the ball. I think I'd put Columbus probably number one, because they're a little bit better in transition. They don't get just torn apart completely. They have a little bit more kind of youth in their legs. But you know who I'd almost put that would be like a kind of a wild shout? Montreal.
Courtois ball,
because they have that kind of flair, that same flair as like a Columbus. Like, they're starting to get there, but while they're building up that like trust and kind of like commitment to that style, they're just playing like a hard nose, like strong defense. I could see a team like that just bait Nashville out and then just kill them on the counter. That's what I would do if I played against Nashville. I would just match their style and just destroy them.
Yes, sir. Big win for Nashville. Charlotte losing after a promising start, so that's disappointing.
We didn't even talk about Charlotte at all.
They got a lot of flowers the first couple weeks because of Dino Smith. Remember that? So they'll get their
old Dino.
They'll get their turn in the spotlight, because we have LA Galaxy hosting St. Louis SC. Another wild classic, just MLS After Dark game. This was the last game on Saturday. It's a 3-3 draw. Red card, late equalizer. Just, you have it all here. Own goals.
Absolutely just insane game. It feels like, I don't know if it's just because it's like, the off season kind of makes you forget what MLS is like. But this season has just been so crazy. So many like stoppage time winners. Crazy. There's been like a lot of red cards so far. Just crazy score lines. It's been a really fun season. And this week was a good epitome of it. Like this game and the Chicago game both. But
Hamburger League.
McDonald's League. LA Galaxy looking good though. Looking really good. I'd say they were pretty unfortunate to have tied this game. The 88th minute own goal by John McCarthy's kind of unfortunate. St. Louis definitely identified a little bit of a weakness there, because when they were taking set pieces, they just had somebody hassling him. Even on, I think, the earlier goal, the 60th minute one, was
from the center back.
Yeah, it didn't really directly affect the ball in that play, but if you watch beforehand, they have people on John McCarthy, kind of just like causing some discomfort there, and then they have a center back score a bicycle kick on him. But yeah, LA Galaxy though looks really good, and they look really lethal in transition. Joseph Paintsill just looks like I think he's gonna be probably best 11 caliber by the end of the season.
Looking really, really good. I agree. Looking like, I mean, one of the newcomer of the years for sure. I won't say the Definitely up there, though. So big, big point for both teams. I was going to say big win, but it wasn't. Just these are the games you love to watch as a neutral. Just back and forth. The crowd was really loud and into it. You got equalizers, bicycle kicks, stoppage time goals, red cards. Like, from the third minute to the 96th, there was goals, and it was awesome to see. Next up, our poor boy Caleb Porter and the New England Revolution hosting FC Cincinnati. And Cincinnati gets a dub on the road. But the Revs, man, 4 losses in 4 games, and it's not looking good at all. Advanced from the Champions League, though.
At this point, what does Caleb Porter do? Does he try and balance it out, or is he just like, screw it, guys, we got to go all in on the Champions League, because it's looking rough in the league. They're the -7 goal difference, 4 losses in a row, and not even... Yeah, they played Cincinnati, which is one of the better teams in the league, but they haven't really had a super tough schedule, honestly. It hasn't looked like it. It's not, when you look at their schedule, it doesn't look like it should be 4 losses. I mean, Cincinnati, solid team. Atlanta, good team, but you don't expect them to lose 4-1. Toronto, nobody expected them to be this good. And then first game against DC, that's definitely a winnable game. They should have at least been able to get, I'd say, 4 or 5 points out of that run right there.
Right, I agree. At least a win. At least one win in one of your home games. But losing all four is rough. Yeah, I agree. If I'm you, we're going all in on the Champions League, because they've looked good in that. That's the weird thing. They've looked solid in that. And like we've talked about, this is a roster that, at least in my eyes, has a decent amount of quality. Maybe not a top-tier team. I'll concede I was wrong. That's what I was thinking. Maybe they're past it. But it shouldn't be this bad. I go all in on the Champions League. And as we've seen with Sporting Kansas City last year, it takes, you know, a good run. They went and made the playoffs after not winning their first 10 games. They can get 1 or 2 wins out of this Champions League stretch. At least that puts them kind of on the map to start accumulating and building towards the regular season.
I agree. They just need something. They need something out of this before they're done with the Champions League. Because if not, it's going to be a mountain to climb later.
It's going
to
be a rough, rough year. And most importantly, I didn't see if they did their T-dump this week. Because this is a home game. We should have looked that up. We didn't do our proper diligence here.
I didn't see either. We were going to talk about that. But moving on, though. Last game of the week. Atlanta versus Orlando. A rivalry that kind of started because of one man and remains today, even though that man's played for multiple clubs since then. It was like a heated game. I kind of watched bits and pieces of this. It's kind of weird seeing this like natural rivalry kind of arise, because it's really heated whenever they play against each other, and it's fun to watch.
Love to see. I agree. These games with the big crowds and with teams that genuinely dislike each other is my favorite like viewing type of MLS, because you're right. These two teams hate each other. They started in the South when they were the only teams at the time. Now there's like 6 teams down there. So
DC,
that's stupid. But at a time, yeah, where there's a lot more action in some of the other MLS teams and more of the spotlight has shifted, these teams genuinely hate each other. And Atlanta just comes away with another win. I mean, since that loss at Columbus, they've been on fire. Yakumakis has been on fire. It's looking pretty darn good for them.
I feel like you don't find these type of rivalries very often anymore, of like teams that actively dislike each other. Like it's in almost a lot of this stuff, like spurs from players like Joseph Martinez, who kind of just throw caution to the wind and don't really care too much about their PR and will go out there and say stuff. I feel like a lot of players now like try and safeguard their future almost. Like they never know where they're going to go, where they're going to end up. So they don't really go out and say this kind of stuff out in the public. But I miss the old days when players would just go out and kind of speak their mind a little bit more and actively, you know, get on other teams about stuff.
Right. Seattle, Portland, players hated each other. I'd say, yeah, this one, they hate each other. You have, you know, I feel like the other Orlando rivalry against Miami, since Messi's come to town, those League Cup games,
a little bit more heated.
Those felt a little spicy. But you're right. A lot of those rivalries that
you don't
have been,
really see too much. I mean, like I'm trying to think of other ones. Like maybe Columbus, Cincinnati might have that kind of same feel to it this year. The Hudson River Derby isn't really the same anymore. I mean, those first couple of years, there was a lot of heat and a lot of tension there. But yeah, I don't know. There's not too many games like this where you just see a lot of anger, a lot of aggression between the two sets of players. But right. I don't even think we said the score line yet. Atlanta puts the beat down on Orlando, 2-0. Giakoumakis scores a banger from outside the box, and they kind of just cruise through. They looked like they were kind of comfortably in control most of the game. Orlando, another team similar to Dallas, has not really been looking too hot so far at the start of the season.
Right. They've had a tough time scoring goals. And other than that 4-3 loss at home where Duncan McGuire got a brace, it's been hard for them to find consistency in the final third, to get good chances, putting away good chances. And I agree. I'm not feeling too great about me putting them at second place in the East.
A lot of people put them as Supporter Shield favorites, and
yeah,
I mean, I was pretty high on them as well, and I think they'll figure it out. They're still kind of shuffling around. Like this game, they started as a 4-4-2, which isn't what they played last year. They're trying to figure out a way to get the best out of Duncan McGuire and Luis Muriel. So, I think they'll figure it out. I have faith in Oscar Pereja to figure this out.
That's gonna do it for our MLS week in review. All right,
goodbye, everybody.
Yeah, like we said, a bit of a shorter pod, and we're going to do a quick game, do some predictions, and then get the heck out of here.
Go over last week's predictions. We got every game wrong, both of us.
We did. So not even worth mentioning. We got every single game and every single result wrong. So
that doesn't happen very often. At least one of us gets like one of the results right or something. Like not the score line, but we'll guess like, oh, it was a draw or something.
That's a good point.
Every single game that we guessed, even the ones that we guessed two separate results on, the opposite happened.
The third result.
That's funny.
You're right. We're going to do...
We got some Sporkle quizzes. I don't know if anybody remembers. These are very hit or miss. They could be very good entertainment, or they could be a rough go of it.
Generally...
Jacob pulled up some heat with these in the past, though.
I feel like this is a game where if you're newer to MLS, or if you haven't been around for a long time, a lot of these names might mean nothing, because it feels like with big players, there's kind of this turnover in MLS, I feel like, consistently, whereas when we do like the blind drafts, that's more just banter and jokes and talking about current players. This is to test some deep dive of knowledge of who you got in the bag when it comes to MLS. Kind of like the Who Am I's, but with less interesting clues. So for your MLS Sporkle quiz, Chase, I have done the liberty of looking up a prime season in MLS. 2017, you got that little sweet spot before COVID, post-logo change. What we would both maybe consider the prime of MLS. You got Kakuta Mane, Darren Maddox lighting it up, Bastian Schweinsteiger, Kaká. You got some older stars. Good times in MLS. I want to see if you can name every player in MLS who had double-digit assists, more than 10 assists. Oh, there's 16 total. If you can get 5... I'll consider that a win.
And so what was the season? 2017?
2017.
2017. All right, there's 16 of them. I'm going to go as double digit assists, right?
Double digit assists.
Nico Lodero
is on the list.
Yes.
He is at 12 assists.
Sebastian Giovinco.
Sebastian Giovinco is not on the list.
Really? He didn't get... Wow.
Surprising, yeah.
Do I get a penalty for guessing wrong? Do I get like 3 strikes or something and then I'm out? Or
let's do that. Let's do...
I was going to say, because if not, I'm just going to go rapid fire and just name every player I can think of.
I was
going to
say, how
2017.
About... How about you get 10 guesses? So
see how many I can get out of 10 guesses?
We'll do it college style. You need a C to advance.
All right. 2017.
So you got one wrong.
Diego Valeri.
Diego Valeri is on the list with 11 assists.
All right.
Barely made it.
So I got 2 for 3 so far. I'm trying to think of other high-end creative players. I don't know if he was even in the league yet. I want to say Julian Gressel because I know he was on a burner right around that time. That was their first year. I don't think he was in the league, but I know his breakout year was like 2018. I'll go Julian Gressel, though.
Julian Gressel was here, but not on the list. You're right. It was his rookie season in Atlanta.
Dang.
So 2 for 4.
2 for 4. Not looking too hot.
one more wrong, and
I'm done. You know who I really want to say that I've been thinking about? Ignacio Piatti, but I don't think he was still good at that time. I think he was like a couple years before. Dang, this is tough. It's tough trying to think of, because a lot of the player, like, I would have been a lot more confident if Giovinco was a yes, but the fact that was a no makes me a little more worried. And then I'm trying to think who else in that Toronto team would have been feeding those guys up top. The only other person I can really think of is Bradley, but he's not that creative of a presence for them. Who else was really good that year? You got... This is tough, man. I'm going to go with Michael Bradley. It's got to be somebody feeding those guys on that team.
Not Michael Bradley. So you're 2 for 5. So you have 3 wrong, which means if you ace the rest, you technically will pass. So you're 2 for 5.
This is hard. Nobody remembers assists.
You're right. Because the top guy, let me tell you, 17 assists. That's pretty darn good numbers. Number 2, 16 assists. Number 3, 15. And then a 4-way tie with 14. So
dang.
A lot of guys made good numbers.
Good numbers that year. And I'm just like exclusively thinking about like center mids. Like I probably need to think a little. I said Gressel, but other than that, like the only guys that are coming to mind like are center mids and are from like 2 years before that. Like I wanted to say Higuain, but I feel like he wasn't good still at that point. Oh man. Let's go with Lucho Acosta, DC United.
It's another guess. However, Lucho Acosta is not
really
on the list.
Wasn't that when Rooney was there already?
That was the year before Wazzarooney.
I was going to say, I know Lucho had like a banger of a year when Rooney was there.
That was the duo, Lucho Acosta and Wayne Rooney.
Dang.
Right. I'll give you some hints since we're past the point of passing.
Since I've already failed.
Number 1. Number 2, number 3, number 4, number 5 are all, well, tied for number 5, but 1 through 4 and then one of the players tied for 5, all in the East Coast.
All in the East Coast. I don't think Hani Mukhtar is in the league yet, so I can't say him. And I think they were a Western Conference team anyways at that point. I'm like, I always blank when we do these quizzes on like random guys from those eras. Like 2017 is such a like forgettable year for me for whatever reason. I don't know why. Oh, man. It's like tough too because so many teams have been added since then. It's like you're trying to remember who even was in the Eastern Conference in 2017.
I'll give you another clue. Top dog, 17 assists, Eastern Conference, American.
What?
American attacking midfielder.
Lee Wynn.
Lee Wynn's number 3.
No way.
15 assists.
What a joke. What the heck, dude? Was that when he was at New England still?
At New England.
Really?
Right before he went to LAFC, you're right.
Lee Wynn.
I forgot how he was. I remember that one year where he like the Revs went to MLS Cup and he was like MVP caliber.
Yeah.
But I kind of forgot he was productive for a solid little stretch there and getting national team call-ups as well.
Alejandro Bedoya? I don't even know if he was in the league yet.
No. There is one former Philadelphia player, but I don't think he'll get him. He was more of a CDM holding midfielder, Bosnian, and he's like 8th on this list.
Dude.
All right. Top dog. American attacking midfielder in the Eastern Conference. that is now an analyst.
An analyst. Oh, Sasha Kljestan?
Sasha Kljestan, number one.
I always forgot that guy was actually good. I've just always like disliked him for some reason.
Fun fact, Sasha Kljestan announced that he's going to be playing in the U.S. Open Cup this year for a USL2 team in Des Moines. Just to prove his love and that it's still a valid competition. He wants to like bring awareness. I respect the cause.
That's crazy.
Especially, too, working for MLS.
Yeah, it's a valid competition, so we're going to have an old retired guy come back and play for our lowest level that's in the competition. Great point, Sasha Kljestan. Great point.
Number two, Toronto FC midfielder with an attacking mind.
I don't really remember too many guys from that Toronto team.
Scored,
funny enough, like that was the year that they were like at the peak of their powers.
Won MLS Cup. Josie Altidore scored the first goal in a 2-0 win. This guy scored the second goal against Seattle.
Oh, man. I don't know, dude. I don't remember that roster.
Victor like, Vasquez.
Oh, what a shout. I honestly, it's funny, like they were so dominant. And I just never, like, watched, like, I never really tuned into them too much, didn't care too much about their roster. And I have such a hard time recalling, like, anybody other than, like, the big three for them, you know?
Right. I agree. I'll just say a couple of these other ones. Higuain was on here. He was tied for fourth with 14 assists.
Really? That guy was still balling in 2017?
Still balling it up. Miguel Almiron, first year in the league, 14 assists.
Oh, that's right. I thought he was their second year with Atlanta. I didn't think he would. I thought he was only there the 2018 season.
Next up, Michael Barrios, 14 assists as well for FC Dallas.
Don't tell me Romel Kyoto is on this list as well.
He's not. There's only a couple surprising ones. Next, Albert Rusnak before he jumped ship to the better team, 14 assists for RSL. Another Atlanta player, Yamil Assad, 13 assists. Once again, first year.
Forgot about that guy.
Atlanta. 12 assists, Romain Alessandrini. We had Nicholas Ladero at 12. The Union player was Harrison Medujanin, the Bosnian midfielder. Number 11 was Alex, who I can't remember, honestly. I want to say Alex. He plays for Houston. Just one word name, Alex.
Isn't that an Orlando guy, actually? May have been Houston.
Maybe.
I'm number 12, sure. I'll say it right here. Luke Maholand.
what an absolute dog of a legend, but no. Number with 11 assists, Jovan Jones from Seattle as a fullback and played a little bit of winger, but pretty impressive numbers. Diego Valeri with 11. Another Atlanta player with 11 assists, Hector Villalba. So they had three players on this list, all with double-digit assists. Kind of nuts. And then this guy, I can't pronounce. He had 10 assists. He was the lowest on the list. Blerim Dzmali. Don't remember that. I want to say he played for Montreal. It just seems like a Montreal guy.
How amazed would you have been if I pulled out that guy, the Union guy, and then Alex? Those are the only three I got.
And then Jovan Jones is like
Jovan Jones.
That would have been nuts.
Oh, man.
That's my game.
All right, I got to redeem myself. I've made my own game here. Screw Sporkle. Every time I do it, I just get just crap quizzes that don't even work.
Or run from Ryan.
Or ones that Ryan suggests. All right, I got worst MLS regular season records. Top five worst. And we could sort them. There's two different ways. I would say this way, worst winning percentage, or we could go by most losses. Your choice.
I'd say losses because I just don't know the percentages, what they would end up being.
It doesn't go based on, like, it's not showing me the percentage. It just shows me, like, their record, but it's, like, worst winning percentage is a better, like, recollection of, like, how terrible of a season you had.
Okay. All right. Top five all time.
Yeah, we could do most losses as well, but
we'll do it your way.
That I'll makes say sense. If we go most losses, it's going to go way deeper because they used to have more games back then, so there's more chances to lose.
Sure. DC United 2013.
That is number three on the list.
Won the U.S. Open Cup that year, I will say.
That is crazy.
Man, there's got to be Houston Dynamo from like the last 6 years on there.
Are we just going top five, or do you want me to scroll down? Because this list goes pretty far.
I'd say top five.
Okay, top five. They're not in there.
No Dynamo. Wow.
Strike one.
Give me San Jose Earthquakes.
Nope.
No San Jose. Wow.
San Jose is tied for 11th on this
list.
Oh,
I'm an idiot. FC Cincinnati. It's got to be one of them.
They are tied for 8th.
They're not.
Actually, they're not tied. They have 8th on lock. They are the only 8th place team there.
So I've already got three strikes. I'm going to keep going, though, because...
Keep going.
I'm not going to give you years. I'll give you like a rough year, but...
Yeah, you can give me like an era, like a timeline.
Timbers 2012? It didn't feel that bad, but...
No, I don't think Timbers are even in... Man, this makes me feel really happy to be a Timbers fan. We're not even in the top 50.
That's pretty awesome. That is pretty awesome. Oh, man. Minnesota United?
Minnesota is... They're down the list a ways.
How about Orlando City circa 2015?
No. Their 2018 season is ranked 18th.
Dang. Man, this is tougher than I pictured.
It's crazy. FC Cincinnati is on here three times in the top 15.
Give me a Rapids season. Colorado Rapids, like a 20... I don't know. Rapids got to be on there, man.
Sixth place, 2023.
Just missed out. Wow.
I will say this as a hint.
Toronto FC. Toronto FC was pretty bad.
Number one, 2023. 4 wins, 20 losses.
That's wild. That's pretty bad, man. So I got 1 and 3.
You got 1 and 3. Two of the other top 5 teams are no longer teams in MLS.
Okay, so Tampa Bay Mutiny.
Number 2 with their 2001 season of 4-21-2.
And it's got to be Chivas USA, right?
What season?
2014?
2005. Four Jeez. Wins, 22 losses, 6 draws.
I think that was their first year as well.
Can you get the number 4 team?
Number 4. So we got Toronto, Tampa Bay, DC, fourth place team, and then Chivas?
Yep, and then Chivas.
Man, this is tricky. I won't lie to you. Because I don't want to guess just like every team, you know?
I'll give you 2 guesses at this to win it.
Respect. Give me Vancouver Whitecaps.
No, it is not. Do you want a hint for your last guess?
I'll take a cheeky hint.
Vancouver was tied for 24th.
It's tough because there's those teams like Vancouver and...
There's a lot of forgettable seasons where mixed in here, man.
Where they've been like mid for so bad, but I guess they haven't really been like the worst team bad. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. This is an MLS original team. And the season was in 1999.
That's a rough year, man.
I was 1 year old.
I was negative 1 year old. Why not? Let's go New York Metro Stars.
That is correct. 7 wins, 25 losses.
That's so Metro.
So if you were to go by most losses, that would put them at number 1. And then
that's really bad.
Yeah. 7 wins, 25 losses. If you were to go down the column of most losses rather than worst winning percentage, it goes DC United in 2013 at 2. With 3-24-7. Kansas City Wizards also in 1999 with 8 wins, 24 losses. So they're only 1 win away from being...
Those are some matchups, I bet, man.
They got Chivas in 2005, like we'd already gone over. RSL...
Skipped half a decade to
RSL
get to Chivas.
RSL also in 2005 with... Man, it's kind of crazy how similar these guys had seeds. Like, 2005, Chivas were 4-22-6. RSL was 5-22-5.
Hey.
That's rough. Western Conference just was beating down on these guys. FC Cincinnati is in the top 10 for both sides of this bracket here. I always forget how terrible they were when they first came into the league.
They were shockingly bad. And before them, it was Minnesota. And then before them, it was Orlando. It's kind of like the new kids on the block who were pretty bad and, you know, were kind of a laughingstock. Who's that now? Is that Austin at this point?
I'd say so. I'd say probably Austin. It was Toronto last year. Maybe Colorado. Not so far this season, but last season, Colorado.
Yeah. As in, like, the newer team. And all of them, too, have had, like, decently well, like, fan groups, well-supported. And there's just these crappy seasons, like, year after year after year, it felt like.
I have a little fun fact here for you as well.
Let's hear it.
You know, the worst team by winning percentage to make the MLS playoffs was the Miami Fusion with a 13-19 record.
That's right. Phil Neville was not the worst coach in MLS in Miami. We'll take it, boys.
Imagine losing 19 games and then making it to the semifinals and playoffs.
That's why we love playoffs, baby.
They have some cool pages on this website. They got longest MLS Cup droughts.
New England.
All-time best MLS regular seasons. Most MLS wins since the year 2000. That'd be a cool quiz to do, actually.
Dude, New England might have sweeped that whole thing because longest drought is definitely New England. They've never won it. Most best points record, New England won it 3 years ago. Most wins might be New England since they have the points record.
Best MLS teams who missed the playoffs?
New England. Just kidding.
Let me see who the number one team is.
Yeah, Sporkle's an awesome website. Check it out if you're...
I'm on champsorchumps.us.
Don't check out Sporkle. Check out Sporkle, though. It's pretty fun. There's some pretty interesting stuff if you're not Chase.
Yeah,
Chase
don't click on the word ladder quizzes. Those are stupid.
Those are weird. Like, they're like, it's like a dumb newspaper game you'd play. Like,
it is. It's like a weird version of what's that one word game that
Wordle?
Yeah, it's like a dumb version of Wordle.
Like a much worse coherent game version of that. That
exactly.
Briefly has to do with MLS.
I hate it. Let's move on to our predictions, though, shall we? First up, we got St. Louis hosting DC in the Peter Stroud Derby. Jared Stroud. Peter Stroud Derby doesn't exist yet.
Messed up your Strouds. I'm going 2-1 St. Louis. St. Louis is at home. They're going to overcome the emotion of the moment of Jared Stroud walking back into, what is it, City Park? You've been there. What's their stadium called?
Purina Dog Chow. Woof, woof.
Anyway, the moment's going to be too big. It's gonna be like Ronaldinho returning to Barcelona. 2-1 St. Louis.
I'm going 1-1. I think Jared Stroud's going to just have this place completely distraught. Before the game, he's going to be, like you said, like Ronaldinho going back to the Camp Nou. He's going to be taking pictures with the St. Louis squad. During the game, though, he's going to turn into like a prime Pepe and like the El Clasico is just slide tackling. He's going to destroy like João Klaus's ankles and just cleat somebody in the throat.
It's like, have you seen that clip where like Messi is like subbing in? And you see all the, it's from a Clasico in the early 2010s, and you see all the Real Madrid players like whispering to each other, like planning what to do. It's going to be Jared Stroud lining in.
When he scores, he's going to be like that clip of Adebayo or whatever, where he just scores against his former team, runs to the away fans and celebrates in front of them.
If I had to pick any player in MLS to do it, it would literally be him.
Jared Stroud. He seems like the most... He's the kind of guy that creates those rivalries. Just what we were talking about earlier. He's the guy that creates rivalries, and I kind of respect him for that.
You love to see it. You know, you think he's going to just hound Tim Parker to make him try and do like a back pass to him, just send him through on goal?
Actually, yeah. Because wasn't he the one that did that against
Kip Keller, right?
That's crazy.
Austin,
yeah.
He used to play there. Picture if Jared Stroud went to Seattle. Picture booing that guy every year up there.
I would pay for us to get front row seats so that he could actually hear us.
Just scream at him the entire 90 minutes.
Screaming at him. Only him, too. And he's like on the bench. We're just screaming. We're sitting right behind him, just screaming at him the whole time. That'd be awesome.
Next up, Toronto FC hosting Atlanta United. A thrilling matchup. I'm going 2-1 Toronto. Home crowd's going to be in it. They just lost on the road. The home crowd momentum's going to take them. Another Insigne moment of brilliance.
I'm going 2-1 Atlanta.
Nope.
I think Insigne is going to lead this team. Toronto's going to look good. The vibes are going to be high. But I think Atlanta is just way better of a team, and they're also riding extremely high right now. Giakoumakis is firing on all cylinders. Thiago Almada looks elite. Their attack is just clicking on every level. And that's what swayed me. I had Toronto winning this originally when I typed it out, and then I started weighing these two teams up, and like both attacks look really good right now. And then I started thinking about the defense, and Toronto's defense is not,
hey, watch
what
you say.
Does not convince me at all.
Let me introduce you to a cheeky Shane O'Neill who's going to have, he's going to empty his pockets. Thiago Almada, Giakoumakis, they're all going to be out. Easy game, 2-1.
Say what you will. But moving on to something we could probably agree on here, Vancouver hosting Real Salt Lake. The Barcelona of the Midwest.
The Demir Krylock Derby.
The Demir Krylock Derby. I like that.
This, I got Vancouver winning 3-0. They're at home. They're flying. But this feels like a game Salt Lake like steals like on the road. This
Chicho Arango header off a like a deep set piece. Like not a corner, but like kind of 10 yards off the top of the 18.
That or like Anderson Julio like just scoring like an acrobatic finish in like the 84th minute to put the game away.
I could see it. I could see that happening. But I'm going Vancouver 2-0, though. I think Vancouver, they look really good right now. RSL isn't super convincing. Seems like they have to figure some things out and go into a
how to make crowded, it snow.
Go into a crowded BC place that almost gets to the point where they need to open up the top section. Is not the place to figure things out.
Good job, Whitecaps. You're winning 3-0 or 2-0, but we also secretly
confirmed.
Salt Lake are going to win. So, whatever you make of that. That's going to do it for this episode of the MLS Net Boys experience. Possibly, quite possibly, the last episode with the current intro.
We may be getting a real intro.
Jace might be cooking up some magic on the interwebs, getting some good stuff. And that's going to be it. Episode 49, we're one away from the halfway of a century mark.
It would be very fitting to have episode 50 be where we debut our real intro.
Love to see it. Love to see it. Follow us at MLS Net Boys on X, formerly known as Twitter. Email us at MLSNetBoys@gmail.com. Like us on Spotify. Harass us in the street if you see us and recognize us.
Harass Keegan Hughes. Harass Preston Judd on their social medias.
Comment on every Christian Roldan Instagram post.
That should be our new outro. Christian Roldan, never come on our show.
Oh, man. Somebody's going to take that out of context these days and, like, link us with, like, cyberbullying or, like, swatting his house somehow when that's not what
we
said.
I would never swat him, but I would actively cyberbully Christian Roldan.
You just scream in your face as loud as he can.
I'm going to just send him, like, audio notes on, like, Instagram.
DMs?
Going, screaming.
Me and Chase, I feel like we try to be pretty professional here. We do our MLS jabs and our funny business, but as soon as it gets to just railing on Seattle, we just turn into 12-year-old child. Dude, picture how sweet it would be if the Timbers beat Seattle 8-0 this year. We just make fun of their coach.
Some of my like worst like showings on social media come from me just arguing with Seattle fans in comment sections. Or, like, my old, like, Snapchat stories from when I was in, like, high school or, like, middle school. Like, remember, I had, like, a Sounders fan, like...
Was he, like, eating nachos or a hot dog?
He was celebrating. He was celebrating, just being super annoying and then eating nachos. And I think I sent a picture. I don't know if I put it on my Snapchat story or, like sent it to, like, friends or something. But I just sent a picture, like, the back of this guy eating nachos. And I was like, I hope you choke on your nachos. Looking back, I was just a kid. But it's like, what a psychopath thing for me to say over, like, a team sports ball game.
Yeah, some people can get carried away with the love of the game. It's gonna do it. A clean hour and a half on this pod. I'm pretty impressed with this time. Hey. That's kind of a nice sweet spot for us.
You don't want to riff for another hour?
Tell me why.
Sana Nayasi Kakutamane, Eric Miller, Chad Marshall.
Pick the slowest two guys.
Steve Birnbaum.
The fastest two guys in MLS history.
Ike Opara. I'm gonna just keep naming names for the next hour.
Chris Pontius. I'll do you one better.
Anyways, we should do that once as a game where we have to go through the full alphabet naming players back and forth.
I like that, actually. That would be pretty good.
Nobody steal that idea before we Nobody get to record it. It's going to be
extra
like
time.
Rave Green TV posting the video.
Oh, man. I will say I like Rave Green TV. Met the guy in person at Portland after at halftime before a nice 4-1 demolishing Seattle. I love to just think, too. Last every time I see that poor guy, he's so professional and he's so excited for all these games. And he's pretty level-headed, actually. He'll be like, yeah, I don't see why all these experts think we're poised to be a top team. And I'll just see like, yeah, I wasn't planning on making a video today, but I'm just so pissed at the Sounders. They can't score a goal. That poor guy, man.
Oh, man. We should do a collab with him because I feel like he would be pretty chill.
He's a good guy. It's just crazy. I tell my wife this because she kind of got into soccer when I did. And when we started dating, that was like 2020, and I've been a fan, you know, forever for the Timbers. And I was trying to explain to her, how I always hype up our Seattle away trips. And I'm like, yeah, it used to not be like this because we'd go every year and they'd beat us comfortably in Seattle. It was terrible. And you'd drive home. But they haven't lost up there. You've never seen them lose up there.
Every time I've gone, they've either tied or won.
2017 was the last time they beat. Almost a decade at this point.
That's awesome.
I was in high school. Barack Obama had just ended his term as president. Trump just got into office.
That's crazy.
I mean, Toronto FC hadn't won their MLS Cup yet. Just
a lot has changed.
A lot has changed in the world.
That is crazy. Yeah, that was the year after I graduated high school.
Vine might have been around at that point still.
TikTok didn't exist yet. TikTok Musically.
Yeah, the world was much, much different. The PS3 Man. hadn't even been out for 4 years yet at this point.
That's insane to think about the last time the Timbers lost in Seattle. I hope that continues. I hope Phil Neville.
If I ever see that guy.
What's crazy is we have to wait until October 29th to figure out if that record's going to extend or not.
Yeah.
It almost is going to be like, that tension's going to build all year long, dude. Oh, man, I can't wait for it.
Seattle. If I see Phil Neville in the street and if I had one sentence to ask him or tell him, it would be, you better make sure that this streak does not die. You better be calling Gio, seeing whatever he
get
did.
Get him in for the locker room, like, pregame speech. If you could take one or two, this will be the last thing I ask you. Timbers, the next 10 years, they win one trophy or they remain undefeated in Seattle. What do you take?
What trophy? Any trophy?
Okay, we'll go, yeah, MLS Cup.
I mean, I take the MLS. Well,
because that record at that point would be like 17 years, 18 years undefeated in Seattle. Then even if Seattle wins more trophies, like the rivalry is still like,
so
it's not a question.
If Seattle wins more trophies in that time span, if Portland wins the MLS Cup and I take that, I'd rather have the streak. If Seattle doesn't win an MLS Cup, give me the MLS Cup.
How about this? You get three trophies, but you lose every game against Seattle.
Does Seattle win any trophies?
No.
Give me the trophies. Give me three
home
MLS.
And home and away though against Seattle.
Oh,
so you lose three times a year to Seattle.
We win,
but you win three MLS Cups in the span of 10 years.
Take it. You got to take the money and run.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. Anyways, we have ramped. We did our outro like 10 minutes
ago. Fantasy.
We should just cut it. We should just have Isaac just cut this like midway, just randomly while we're talking. Just like, let's just go static. Thank you all for listening, though. This has been fun. I always have a good time chatting MLS.
It's a great time. You can't replace it.
Like Jacob said 15 minutes ago, follow us on all our social media. Send us an email. And as always, Preston Judd and Keegan Hughes, come on the show.